Okay, we are on. Okay, hey, God, welcome. It was really good for me to be at Weston Community Church. I was speaking there, and that was quite an experience for me. But that will take too long to go into, so I'm not going to go there. Those of y'all, most of y'all showed up at the book signing party to produce. Thank you to Ed and Kathy, all who helped. It was kind of a magical evening and just really, really neat time. I just want to say that publicly. And also for Gary filling in for me. And I heard from just several people just came up and just told me how meaningful it was to them. So thank you, my friend, for walking and filling the gap. Yeah. Can't hear me? Okay. Thank you, Dee Dee. Okay, well, we're going to go back to the unspeakable ache, and just a little bit of review. We've tracked through the ache for fame, longing for impact, significance, trying to figure out, how we can be noticed in life, and we sort of track that through the movies, through the scriptures in our hearts. And then we kind of gone into the ache for intimacy. There are other words that kind of use this category. And this is just a working one. You can speak about connection, love, bonding, unity. All of those kind of flow in and out of this same arena that we're talking about. When we sort of try to think about it by looking at what happens when we're on a team of people working with them, particularly a sports team, but it could be any team. We looked at how that ache for intimacy through the giving and receiving of secrets. And then the last couple of weeks we talked about intimacy in the family, how that's met or ignored or even shattered. So now we're ready to kind of move a little bit further into this. I want to go a bit different new territory, but again, the ache for intimacy, this is a working definition. These are just words that kind of a rough idea, just to make sure we're all on the same page. It's the longing to know others and to, more importantly, be known by them. And with that knowing, in that unveiling, a connection happens, a bond that captures us, both in its power and in its wonder. And inside of that bond, we feel both safe and alive. Okay. So that's, again, that's not the experience, but that's of it, but that's pulling it back and trying to put some words to it so we can map out the experience. So as I've done before, let me just walk you through just a little bit about how it surfaced this week for me. And again, my hope in doing this is that you will be able to identify more stories in your own life, because I think this is going on in our lives. Well, it's going on in our lives all the time, whether we realize it or not. It's just inside of us. So I want to just take you through one realization and sort of one experience this week. And this was a very learning week for me. This came up many, many times, but I'll just stick to these two. The admission, I'm going to start with an admission before I move to the realization. I knew when I kind of walked into this one, I had much more of a feel for the ache for fame. But this one is murky territory for me. And it's murky because it's something that I've shut down in my life for many, many years. And I knew that walking through it and having to teach it was going to be in some ways a bit dangerous for me as well as a bit necessary. And it's proved to be that. I sort of sensed that from the outbreak. And it's been revelatory at any number of points. But I want to tell you the realization. The realization, the experience. The realization was this. I came to a deeper realization of why I like stories and movies so much. In both in the written form and in the visual form. And I always have known, I don't know if you feel this, whenever I pick up a book or whenever I start into a movie, I'm subtly looking for something. I'm hoping for something. I'm expecting something. And it's more than just the newness of what's going to unfold. That's there. But it's something else. And I've never been able to quite put words to it until this week. And I think what I've been looking for is to come alive in the moment and to be aroused out of a dark and deadened state, which oftentimes I feel. I have known how movies have made me come alive in a way that I struggled to even find when I read the Bible or when I went to church. I mean, just being honest with y'all. And the realization came to me as to why that happens. And this is what came up. It just was like one of those aha kind of things. I realized when I pick up a book and read it, or when I watch a movie, I see intimacy portrayed there often. Very often, it's a theme of so many stories. And I see the emotion attached to it, and my heart subconsciously participates in it, or vicariously participates in it. It's not that I'm really being intimate with anybody, but as I'm watching it, I can sort of almost get close enough to it to feel it, kind of as a third party watching our intimacy maybe happening with others, whether friends, family, or spouses. And then it occurred to me, as I realized that that's why I like it so much, it occurred to me in that realization that how little I have crossed over this into my real life. Now, you may think when I talk about myself or when I share something that I'm being intimate with you, but I'm really not. I mean, how can you be intimate with 50 people? And I realize that that's kind of a bit of a false, a deception. And I imagine if it's that way with me, I imagine it's that way with many others who find themselves standing in front of people, whether they be ministers or actors or musicians. It's like it's almost a substitute for real intimacy because they don't know how else to get it. And along with that realization, another thing came to me. The sadness and grief of 55 years of allowing myself to be intimate with others began to wash over me. It really did this week. Just sadness at how much my own busyness, drivenness, or ambition has been a terrible exchange for that. And I got real clarity for that. And then I decided to do something very, very different this week. I just decided to stop. I really did on Thursday. I just said, I'm not doing anything. I'm just going to stay in the sadness. And it was really, really, a really sad day. And I just let the kind of the grief wash over me. And just trusted that maybe that God was going to meet me in some way. And the experience that happened was, again, very, very surprising. I went swimming that afternoon because often I could feel myself already being pulled down into depression, which often happens when I get sad. And so I was just swimming and trying to, you know, just keep myself sort of moving physically to help me emotionally. And I was doing my laps, a freestyle. I was just letting my mind wander, nothing. And about halfway through one of the laps, I just sensed the Lord telling me this. I want to be intimate with you. I want to be intimate with you. I was so startled. I literally stopped swimming. I just stood up in the middle of the lap lane. And I went, what? It was so tender. It was in that moment of just allowing myself to be sad that I sensed the Father coming to me and just speaking something to me. I'm still feeding off of that, losing it at times, even the last few days, coming back to it. It's the taste of the real thing, not watching it in a movie, not reading about it in a book. It's the real thing. I know it sounds obvious, but it hasn't been for me. Opening myself to others, allowing others to be intimate with me, allowing that process with others, starting with Heidi, my children, my siblings, my friends. It's new territory. I had assumed at some visceral level that others were different from me, that at some level I really wasn't worth knowing, that at some level others would find there, if they did know me, something that was ugly or disgusting. But what if that's not true? What if all that's a lie? What if the Father, who delights in me as its Son, is it at all possible that perhaps others could enjoy my presence and that I could enjoy theirs? Really? Again, these are just some of the new revelations. I just wanted to tell you that because that's, again, the work in progress for me, kind of how I'm pushing into that. It's been amazing. It's been an amazing journey for me. I want to, with that, just go ahead and walk you through where I want to go this week. I want to talk about marital intimacy. We've talked about intimacy in various contexts, but we need to go here just because it's so, so important. And I want to touch on it in a bit of a different way. You know, this is the one relationship where the two are supposed to become one. I mean, that's what's been set down. That's what's been ordained. You know, the tragedy is that many marriages don't end up here. They're hijacked or shattered. But the fight to push through this is really one of the narrow straits of intimacy that needs to happen or can happen in a marriage. And where I want to go with this is not, I don't want to talk about falling in love, although, and I don't want to talk about sexual intimacy, although those are sort of echoes of this. I want to go to another place in this, and where I think is the crux of our own sadness, that real intimacy in a marriage can happen and what oneness may look like. So let's just watch and see this first, and then this is from the King's Speech, and this is in the middle of sort of the movie where Bertie is facing his worst nightmare. His brother has abdicated from the throne, and he is going to have to face being a king. And the prospect of him as a stammerer doing this. So let's watch.
I meet you today in circumstances which are
trying to familiarize myself with what a state paper looks like. So, dispatch from Mr. Baldwin, which I don't understand a word of. David's finances. Christmas would cast.
Oh.
Think that would be a mistake?
No, don't worry about that. There.
That's for coronation. Think that would be an even bigger mistake. I'm not a king. I'm a naval officer, that's all I know. I'm not a king, I'm not a king. I'm sorry.
No.
I'm sorry.
No, don't be sorry. My dear, dear man. I refuse your first two marriage proposals, not because I didn't love you, but because I couldn't bear the idea of a royal life. Couldn't bear the idea of a life of tours and public duty, a life that no longer was really to be my own. But then I thought, he stands so beautifully, so leave us alone.
Well, I remember watching that scene and just feeling something really be pulled up in me. It was very deep. This is Bertie's worst nightmare. You know, he's facing the reality of now before the whole watching world, everybody's going to know he's a stutterer. And in a time when his country needs him, he can't speak. And it's that moment of heartbreaking desolation and anguish that Elizabeth, his wife, speaks to him. This intimacy is only possible through the brokenness inside of Bertie. He's trying to keep it together, you know, on the outside. And he's just falling apart. I can't do this. I'm not a king. And as you notice, those great pictures, he's in the coronation accession. And, you know, he feels so disconnected from everybody, right? You see how that was all filmed. And then as he's stuttering, he watches all the kings and queens before him. And who was the last one? Did you picture that? Who was the last one? His father, who just completely brutalized him. And yeah, I can't do this. In that moment of wrenching weakness, that's when Elizabeth offers something. She sees the man, and instead of trying to add to his shame or fix it, she does something startling. She simply sees it totally differently. And she speaks it to him. Do you notice what she said? The very reason why you think people should despise you is the very reason I love you. You stammer so beautifully. You stammer so beautifully. This is an evocative picture of what marital intimacy can sometimes look like. Here are the two becoming one in a place where it was most shameful and most sad for one, it's re-imaged by the other. It's something lovely in that person's eyes. Here is the power of love. It produces literally a change of feeling. We see ourselves through the eyes of another. It's transforming. Shame is a disruptive intimacy. It's violating, caustic. Something is revealed about us. It's not the intimacy that we want. It's the intimacy that feels violating. It's not a willing unveiling. It feels like a forced stripping. We are left naked before others so that we feel foolish, despicable, ruined. I know that's what Bertie felt. Just stammering. Ruined. Completely ruined. We can't give to others what they are expecting of us. We can't do it. And no matter how hard we try, we know it's not going to happen. And that sense of shame comes over us. Shame can also happen when we're perceived out of the norm. Ever gone to a party with the wrong clothes on or a gathering? you know, and you just go, I am out of the norm, and you think everybody's looking at you. Or when you don't measure up to the expectations of somebody significant, and you're like, I can't meet that. And in that, you feel really annihilated. For example, when a son or a daughter may not become the star athlete or scholar their father was. As a result, this is what shame does. We feel first emotionally assaulted and then molested. We're left in shock and we cover and hide, making promises never to find ourselves in that situation again. We think the vow is going to save us. All the vow does is to keep shame so powerful in our lives. We keep running away faster and shame keeps following right behind us. That's the tragedy of it. The only way to get out of it is to turn and face it. We can't self-heal our shame. We have to have it healed in the eyes of another. Shame is a relational violation. It can only be mended in relationship with somebody. And this is where marriage can become so redemptive. And as I say this, it doesn't necessarily have to happen in marriage. This can happen between friends. This can happen between a mentor and a mentee. This can happen in any sort of relationship. But in marriage, it has the power particularly to do this. For here, a man and a woman find themselves pressed together in the closest of ties, and at some point, they're going to collide into each other's shame. And it's in that moment where we can help each other re-image what we felt about ourselves. No, Bertie was wrong. He is a king. You know, and his mentor, Lionel, said, Bertie, you've got more courage than anybody I've ever met. You'll make a bloody good king. It's really who he was, being re-imaged again through Lionel's eyes. It's instructive. Let me just open the scriptures here. It's instructive to go to the scriptures at this point and look at marriage in the context of first, its first moment when we find it showing up in scriptures. Not only the description of it, but then how it's looked at in Paul. Genesis 2, the end of Genesis 2, you're going to find the whole sort of these two verses, they're all wrapped around sort of the idea of oneness and intimacy. Genesis 2, 24 through 25. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and they will become one flesh. The man and his wife were both naked, and they felt no shame. So there is a leaving, obviously, and then there is uniting, a coming together, a oneness, a connection. And in that connection, there's a physical connection, an emotional, a spiritual connection. And the reason that's possible is because they're naked without shame. And the implication seems to be it's not just physical nakedness. Again, that's a picture of just this complete emotional vulnerability to each other. And in that, there's no fear. I can't even imagine that. That's like asking me to imagine, you know, it's like asking a blind person to imagine green. I mean, it's almost so out of kilter. All we seem to know in this life is shame and the power of fear and covering and hiding. It's so instinctive in us. And yet this picture of oneness and connection revolves around the fact that there is no shame. And there's no fear of that. How can this possibly happen? Well, it happens in those moments of revealing. And instead of the expected shame or condemnation comes love in the form of comfort, understanding, or even hope. Our worst reason for rejection becomes our greatest reason for being loved. It seems ridiculous to our hearts in that moment to even imagine going there. But it's the only way shame's going to be overcome. And when you think about it, it kind of, you know, it's that way in so many other areas of our life. You know, you get a piece of glass stuck in your foot, and you know, I'm going to not think about it, I'm going to ignore it, Maybe it'll go away. You know, at some point, I got to go in there and dig it out. You know, I got to face it, turn it, and dig it out. Those of you who are downhill skiers, I remember the first time I went skiing, they were like, okay, to do the switchbacks, you have to lean down the hill. If you lean back, you're never going to switch back. And you think, if I lean down the hill, I'm going to speed up too much, I'm going to fall down. But actually, that's the only safe way to do it. You have to lean down to switch back, otherwise you're just going to go out of control. It's almost the opposite of what you think. It seems to be an idea we find over and over again in life. Of course, intimacy in marriage can grow many other ways through time spent together, acts of service, words of encouragement. But I wanted to focus on this piece of intimacy because I felt like not only it was really, really important in marriage, it can happen in any relationship. But certainly it can happen inside of marriage. We all need others to help us see beyond our shame, love us, and pull out the hidden glory within us. And if I had to put words to what I think the main theme of this movie is, that's what I think it is. Let me go one last place today. Whoops. Let's just talk briefly about this. How marriage mirrors enemies with God. And I just want to, again, how Paul does this in Ephesians 5 so well. And I just want to call this to attention and make a couple of potential ideas here. What if our relationship with Jesus is this way, that he wants to see beyond our shame, love us, and call out the glory inside of us? And it seems to be a picture in Ephesians 5:25, the call to love our wives, husbands, as Christ loved the church. And then he says, this is how he loved the church. He gave himself up for her to make her holy, cleansing her by the washing with water through the word, to present her to himself as a radiant church without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. That sounds to me like naked and no shame. That's what he's doing, corporately. Here, he knows the sin and ugliness and shame of our lives. He loves us anyway, gives us life force. We see ourselves as unworthy. He says, no, you're worthy enough for me to die for. We see ourselves as shamefully filthy. He says, no, no, no. I want to wash you and clean you by the water of my word, the truth that you're my son, you're my daughter. We see ourselves as ugly, stammering our way through life. He sees us as radiant, beautiful, filled with glory without stain, wrinkle, spot, or stammer. And then he says this. He wants to make the church holy and blameless. This sense of being holy and blameless before the Father is one that we can approach as we speak the truth to ourselves and feel that he wants to approach us. He wants to be intimate with us. He really wants to be connected to us. But to cast this back horizontally one more time, I think those moments where there's an unveiling, where secrets are given, and where there's a healing of shame produces these moments of transcendence, I can only describe them as holy. When I watch Elizabeth and Bertie in that moment, I don't know about y'all, but I just feel the ripples of something holy. It's just profoundly other ordinary. For holiness is not just moral purity. At root, it's something more, something that's alien, far into our own human experience. You know, what could be more foreign to our daily demeanor of masking and hiding than simply unveiling and allowing someone to love us in our most shameful place? Or doing that for someone else? And isn't this a small picture of what happened to me this week with the Father speaking to me in my moment of grief and shame? I mean, he wants to do that for us in our marriages, with our friends, but particularly wants to do that to us individually on a vertical level. That's the power of intimacy. That's how he transforms us. Okay, let's stop here, and I'm going to stop this.